Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I am your host, and I am honored by your wise decision to once again tune in and invest in yourself today. The Business Creators Radio Show is coming to you from my couch here in my sumptuous apartment here in Las Vegas, known to some as the hottest city in America. We go to those places where you have the mastermind meetings and the aha moments that can change your trajectory or at least bring you a little bit closer to your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. We might say that we step out of the studio and into the act. So what we're going to cover today is a topic that when I first saw it a few weeks ago was very intriguing to me. It's about beating corporate malaise to lead with faith and passion. And essentially, what we have going on here is this deals with issues that a lot of us feel, whether we are corporate employees, whether it's our own entrepreneurial ventures. And the guest we have today is going to, I trust, shed some interesting light on that whole feeling of having a sense of malaise, having a sense of not really having the inspiration that perhaps you had at some point. His name is Brent Pullman. He's the owner and CEO of Midwest Laboratories, and he strives to bring his A game daily, the thing we're going to be discussing. He has been CEO of Midwest Laboratories since 2016 and is passionate about teaching others to lead effectively. As a person of faith, he coaches people from the heart, or coaches people up, leads from the heart, and achieves success by focusing on people, processes, and technology in that order. Like me, Brent has an MBA. His is in human resources management as well, and he has been a requested speaker to several Omaha area organizations. And his new book, Leaders Look Within, is about some of the lessons that he has learned throughout his journey and continues to develop as he continues it. So Brent Pullman, come on in. The weather's fine.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you for that introduction. And no, I'm ready. I'm excited to do this talk with you.
All right. So I read off your official bio. Such impressive stuff that I'm not even sure I'm worthy to be in your presence. And this is my show. So what we like to do here is we like to, before we dive into the primary content of the interview, is take a step back and pull back the curtain. So Brent, if you could tell us in your own words a bit about your journey and what's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion the way you do, that would be awesome.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I don't know about you, but there are 1,000 leadership and management books. There's articles every single day on it. There's topics every single day. And, who am I to write something on leadership? That's really what I first thought about, was like, why am I doing this? But I think for me, it was really, as I dug into it more and more about and writing a book, I thought, you know what, leadership is really personal and you got to really find it for yourself. And I think that's where it really starts. And that was the message I kept getting as I got more and more into this, was, you know, every single person comes at it such a different way, different level. And it's so cool once we find it inside of ourselves. And that's really the passion that drew me in, was how do we find this thing called leadership inside ourselves? And that's really the premise of the book. And that's really why I'm here to talk to you about, is how I found it. And maybe that helps you, maybe it doesn't, but I just know, you know, this 10 steps to leadership or 10 steps to be an effective manager, that just never resonated with me, is following something like that.
Right. Did you try it and it just didn't work out for you? And if that's the case, what was the revelation or the series of revelations or the collection of revelations that showed you that that might not be the path for you?
Well, I don't know. For most of my professional career, I was pretty transactional, and I did things spur of the moment. I worked hard. Maybe you did the same thing where, you know, if I put in 10 to 12 hours a day and just keep pushing, someone somewhere is going to finally see me, or I'll go up that corporate ladder somehow. And I just got to push forward. I got to just work harder than anybody else. That was really my mantra, was just working harder than anybody else.
Okay. And how did that work out for you?
Not well. It probably took me down a path where it was unhealthy. I did not, even at home, I didn't really connect well with, I don't think, with my family. And at work, I just wanted things faster. I was really deadline driven, you know, I got to get this, I got to achieve this, I got to meet this deadline, I got to talk to this person. I was just constantly doing those things, and they're very transactional, and I needed a better way. And I think when I woke up in this role as putting in charge, I knew I made a ton of mistakes, and something had to change. And that's when I had to look deep inside and figure out what was going on.
Yeah. So you write about, among other things, and this is part of the process here where I wanted to define some of our terms. We're talking about corporate malaise. So in your work with organizations, how does this manifest itself? I mean, practically, some examples of it. I want to see if anything that you've seen resembles anything that I've seen.
So I think for most, I don't know, I can only speak for myself, but I didn't really have really good leaders that I saw. I just really, and I really didn't see that development. And I don't think I really grasped onto what does it take to be an effective leader. And it really wasn't until I surrounded myself with some really good people that I really realized who I was and started down this path of, here's what I really need to do and to unlock these things. And some people really did help me. You have to know for yourself, you have to want that help that you want in order to figure out what is it that's going to really work effectively to be a leader. And I don't think I thought I could find that in a book. I thought that I could find that in an article or something like that. But I just think there's a really tiredness. Everyone's very, very tired. And I even see it today that you got to take care of yourself and get some energy back in yourself. And if you want to lead effectively, because if you come in angry or any type of sternness, people will see that. And I did not realize the power in that. So, I mean, it was a full attitude change for me.
Well, and you know, you gotta look at what you think of books. One of the things I love about our format here at the Business Creators Radio Show is sometimes a guest reminds me of something, prompts a recollection. And I remember when I first started out, my first entrepreneurial venture was a side hustle where I would read books for owners of entrepreneurial ventures that they didn't have time to read, one of which I cannot remember the title of this book or the author, except for the cover of it was blue. And he was some sort of public speaker who went around speaking on a topic of leadership. And he told a story about how he had shown up at a hotel in the evening for a speech he was going to be given the next day. And he decided that he wanted to get his shoes shined. So he went down to the desk, the front desk, at like midnight, wanting to get his shoes shined for a keynote speech he was doing at 8 a.m. the next morning, and was absolutely aghast. I mean, spent 4 or 5 pages of the book on how unbelievable it was to him that the desk clerk on duty refused to either take his shoes home with him and shine them on his own time and bring them back in the morning when he wasn't even scheduled to work the next day, call around to other hotels and see if they had anybody available to shine the shoes, or offer to have somebody brought in who knows how to shine shoes. Like, this guy, he was mind blown that he was told at midnight that sorry, we can't do that right now. And another thing that struck me as interesting about this guy is he told a story, and he thought it was just some kind of big win that he went into a place that served Coca-Cola products and ordered a Pepsi and got one.
Yeah.
Which I actually don't think happened, because there's usually licensing involved with that.
Right.
Yeah. So sometimes you see those types of examples and you wonder, who's teaching us leadership? What does that really mean? Does leadership mean go so far above and beyond that people just volunteer to collaborate and having their own rights as laborers violated, and while contracts that involve licensing and potentially millions of dollars in liabilities just because you can't drink a Coca-Cola, or you're so highfalutin that you couldn't think to have your shoes shine before you flew to a speech you knew you were given?
Yeah.
Why this comes up to me, I'm not sure. Why am I thinking of this? Sometimes the answers to me are not immediately apparent, but it happens randomly. What I'm suspecting might happen here is when you mentioned the look around, you mentioned a few times reading books, looking for answers. And I was thinking, in terms of the answer to leadership, that's actually an answer that's out there. Would you go by that?
So, yeah, I see where you're coming from. And I guess for me, it was really, I was always kind of I've always been open to learning, but I think I wasn't looking in the right places. And first I had to really, what really all started this was taking over for my father in his business. So when I took over, it was he and I, we were working together for 5 years, but we had such different views on things. So the example you gave was kind of like that was the old style. That was my dad. I mean, So I had to really reconcile with my dad. Is this what, you know, if he didn't see you working 7-8 hours a day at your desk, he was wondering what you were doing. So it was just really that kind of going through that. So then I think what that led me to is, do I really have this entrepreneur spirit in my heart? Because really, even growing up, my dad, I mean, we had the family business. I worked here for a while, but he really encouraged me he would encourage me to go out. He brought me in, but I think there was always this like fear. He had deep down, he had this fear, and I didn't realize it, of the whole business part. And I had to really search, do I have that? Do I have what it takes to be an entrepreneur, as you say? Because you really got, there's a lot of things going on. And it really, really, to your point, I went to this conference and I got in the room with 100 other entrepreneurs in there. It was a mastermind. And I could just feel the energy in the room. I was like, what is going on here, man? This is, yeah, I was meant to be in this place. I was listening to people, small businesses, big businesses, how they were solving. I just loved it. I ate it up. But on the ride home, we were in Austin and our plane got delayed. So we had to take an Uber from Austin to Dallas. I was with my coworker, Dana, and she kept asking me, what's your why? And I could not answer her. And for 3 hours on an Uber ride, she kept asking me, what's your why? And she wouldn't accept anything. And she's a phenomenal leader. And she had three of her own businesses before she came here as a young entrepreneur. And she knew that it was going to take a strong why, or I wasn't going to be an effective leader. So I really had that. That was my first introduction to, like, I really need somebody like that. She was really the first person that really started to tap into, like, this is why you have to be, in order to be an effective leader, you got to really look inside and you got to understand why you're here and why you're here today and what gets you up every morning. And I would give her answers, but she didn't like them. She said, that's not you. You know, you can do better than that. And I really had to work at that. And finally, when I discovered that, that's, again, the premise of the book, a person of faith who coaches people up and leads from the heart. That's me. That's what I had to. I didn't have that right when in that 3 hours. I couldn't come up with those words. But now every day I get up with that passion. And you have to have that if you're going to effectively lead.
Right. So I know what it feels like myself to look into the future and see nothing but a blank screen.
Right. Yep.
And that can be so debilitating. And when you feel that, you begin to question, why are you even here?
Right.
And right. Now I'll tell you, one of the things that attracted me to your topic when you requested to be on my show goes back to this whole thing about corporate malaise. And we've kind of touched around a few things that, I remember when I was in corporate myself, I had this, major go-getter attitude, and I would go so far above and beyond. I might've been the masochistic front desk person working at midnight in a hotel who would actually take that goof off's shoes home with me, shine them, and then bring them back on my day off, because he couldn't think ahead to have his shoes shined. He's a motivational speaker. I might've been the person who actually felt guilty that he needed his shoes shined, and somehow felt that it was my personal responsibility to make sure it didn't happen, or it would have some effect on me as a human being. And I would do things in this job, like I would request days off or request time off, and then come into work anyway. And there was this one time I came in on a day that I'd already scheduled to be off, only to find out that there were a line of people waiting to berate me over stuff that I didn't even know anything about. And I asked my supervisor, why did I bother to come in? And she said, I'm not really sure why you did either. You clearly are giving these people more than they deserve. This is my supervisor telling me this, I was giving these people more than they deserve. So you have the day off. You might as well just go and take Monday off too. And you don't have to put in for it. Cause you do too much. And that was kind of revelational to me that I had scheduled a day off for a reason, then decided that coming into work anyway was somehow expected or required of me. And the moment I showed up, I got faced with abuse over things I had nothing to do with.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think at that point I might have at least begun to feel the onset of some sort of malaise that eventually developed?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think you were like, if I can, I'll kind of piggyback on that. You know, when you're fighting through that, you want to do the best. You're going to do more. You know, that's just your goal. But you don't. I think what I had to understand was I needed to take a seat back. And actually, what I do now, and it's really been effective for me, and I was introduced to this concept, is every single day as part of my daily routine, I have to write down what I was uncomfortable with the previous day. And by doing that, I count my wins and I do my other things, but writing down what I'm uncomfortable with actually forces me to even if I had the best day, I have to think about what am I still uncomfortable with? Because by unlocking that and writing it down, you take the power out of that. You take the fear out of that. You realize that you are doing some things. And maybe it's something you want to spend time on with when you're uncomfortable, or maybe it's not, but it really puts you in control. So I really take that topic of being uncomfortable and I write something down, and it has been a game changer for me. And it's turned into wins later on, because it's where you, like you said, where you spend your time and energy. Do you want to spend it on, okay, I'm going to put in 20 hours tomorrow, or, you know, I know it's my day off, or I'm going to go, what made me a coach? Now, sometimes we can be blindsided by something, but when we really take the time to really just slow down a little bit and just understand what's really happening around us and building that awareness around us, and that as a leader, I have to be out of the day to day, I can support my team so much better, and they are going to go farther, and they're much smarter than I am, and they're going to do so many things. And that's really the power of leadership, I think, is when you take a step back and you understand the big picture of the whole thing, and you realize you don't have to do it all yourself.
Yeah. What happens though, and let's see if this sounds familiar to you, where you know that you need nothing more than just to take a step back. You need to, it may be at minimum, just take the rest of the day off or what have you. But you have so many things that you're obligated to do that you can't get out of and you can't push off. But meanwhile, you know that you're not even mentally equipped to do it, but you have to.
Well,
and it just piles on and it makes it worse. Does that sound familiar?
Oh, yeah. I didn't say it was easy. I didn't say it's a work in process, and every day brings something different. But I used to hate the gray. It had to be black or white. Again, it was just this limited thinking. And now, today, I'm embracing gray because that really shows who your true colors are. And this is all the change and difference in the way in the last 4 or 5 years that you approach this. But again, you got to be, I didn't take care of myself. And when you don't take care of yourself and you don't have enough sleep, you're not going to make good decisions. You just aren't. So I know even in those times when I don't get enough sleep or I was out too late, whatever the reasons, that I got to really prepare myself that, okay, I know there's a ton of stuff going on. I just need to go slow. And then you realize it's okay. And that things will work out instead of stressing over it and making it even worse or trying to speed things up. Cause usually that's the other thing. I'll get accelerated if I'm really tired, or I'll say something that I don't mean. And people laugh at me today because they'll see me in meetings. If someone in the meeting says, hey, I think everyone in this room deserves a 20% salary increase. And if that's happened before, I'll take this huge deep breath now. And they just laugh. They go, then they look at me and they said, are you really uncomfortable? I was like, yeah. I'm taking that, just that little bit to process what I just heard there and trying to understand where is this coming from. And I think that just by doing those things, again, I can only speak for myself, that's really helped me just not be so reactive, because I used to be super reactive to everything.
Yeah. And that is really a tough thing to do, whether you're in an employment situation or rather an entrepreneurial situation, and for different reasons. It's something that I myself, I can't say I've ever overcome it, because I don't think you ever really truly do, but I've put a lot of work into recognizing the patterns and being able to encounter them, know what's going on, and do my best to proceed accordingly when they come up.
Yeah. And by the way, I love these questions. I love these questions because they're real, because it happens every single day. And we have to choose how we're going to respond to these questions. But I think by building the awareness, it's amazing what it can do. You can walk into a room and you can really feel like, is everyone 100% here? Or, you know, as soon as somebody talks, you go, geez, that person, where's that? You know, in my head, I'm like, that just doesn't sound like that person. And usually there is something behind that. And I'm recognizing that more and more. And whereas before, if somebody would just say something, again, I had no awareness or little awareness. I just didn't care. And that's what you get. Then you get something, you get reactive, and bam, boom, boom, boom. It goes down a rabbit hole really fast with that reactivity. Things can happen in such a bad way. And again, I had to learn that. I'm not saying that I'm perfect by any means. And it's definitely a work in process. But I like your questions, because that's our world today. Absolutely, in the business world, what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us about, and if I missed this, reiterate it for us. I know there's a routine you have.
Oh, yeah.
That helps you bring that A game every day. And another piece of this is to ask you about a work-life balance. Now, I'm going to change this a little bit, because I'm not sure work-life balance is truly possible.
Yeah, that, you know, that debate, I go back and forth with choice of words there. And routine is real. I've had a routine now probably, again, for 3 years. Every time I get up, I have to do something physically, whether it's get outside and walk or run or do something with weights, or I just physically have to get my body going. I try to get to bed between 9 and 10, and I have to do that every morning. And as part of my workout, prayer and reflection, And I just know if I don't do that or those days, and it happens. I mean, it happened this weekend. I'm watching our grandkids. I can't do that in the morning. I got to watch. They're very young. That routine's going to get interrupted, but maybe it gets put off or I do it later on in the day. But every day I need to do that. I just know that's just part of me. And my wife has realized too, if I don't do these things, I don't even talk about it. She just knows that's part of the routine. And I'm a better person when I do those things. And I'm in a place to do that. So it is really important every day that those same things happen over and over on a consistent basis. And that's what I've really found through this. So yes, routine is very important. Work-life balance. You know, I do stop work when I get home. I mean, I have to start decompressing. If I used to not do that, I used to just hit the bed and that was it. I mean, I'd work till I couldn't anymore. And then I'd go right to bed, but I was not sleeping well. My quality of sleep was horrible for many, many years. So I just know I just have to slow down, decompress, and I'll sleep so much better. And I'll be so much better the next day.
This is one of those things that's really kind of poignant for me, especially when we think about the importance of routine. Like, for example, I need to, because of my highly introverted nature, have certain guidelines on my availability for things. Like a big one is, and I'm actually not the only person I know who's like this. In fact, a friend of mine who leans more toward the extrovert side of the scale, believe it or not, has one of the same pieces of his routine in place that I do, which is that neither one of us will allow any phone call of any sort before 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Because I need about that much time just to acclimate myself. And I don't want to deal with any external issue until I've had a chance to do something that constitutes a win. And that goes back to a real basic philosophy that if I lead with something successful, then even if the rest of the day goes to hell, it's not a total waste.
Yeah.
Otherwise, and more positively, I start on a winning streak.
Absolutely. See if you can relate to this. I used to have to fill my day in order to think that I was productive. Like 8 to 5, I had to have it all scheduled out. My executive assistant, I mean, if I don't feel or I feel off, I'll tell her, you know what, that 1 to 3, it's not happening today. I'm not in the right. I heard some news this morning. You got to reschedule that. I'm not ready to meet. I would never do that, to your point. And before in the corporate world, you know, you just fought through everything. You just did everything and come hell or high water. But now when you have the choice. And the other thing that I had to get past was self-care is not selfish. Self-care actually when you bring your better self, you're better to other people. And that's really, you have to do that first. You have to take care of yourself before you can take care of the lives of other people or be there for others.
Well, yeah, it's the idea that you can serve more from an overflowing cup than by giving your last dime. I absolutely get that. And why do you think that self-sacrifice, not engaging in self-care, and to a degree being a martyr is lionized and celebrated to the degree that it still is to this day?
Well, I mean, I actually think it's kind of, I think it is kind of softening.
To a degree.
But I do think, to your point, I think people were faking it. Honestly, if you really want my answer for it, you know, you're doing all that hard work, but where the heck is it getting you today, man? I just can't believe. And we talked about the three words earlier in my bio, the people, process, and technology.
Yeah.
It's gotta be that order. If you take care of your people first do that, that has to come first. You have to look at the right people. You got to, make sure people are taken care of, from a safety standpoint. That much, And then processes, you got to put consistent processes in place. And then finally, technology. I think I grew up, you know, technology from the 80s till now. I mean, it's changed so much. And technology was always the focus, especially when we got our iPhones and stuff. I mean, technology was, everyone was just talking. And they still do today. I think there's so much emphasis on technology. But, and I think that's what, I think that's part of the issue here. But people first. Always. That's really, and people will see that. And you can't fake that. I'm being serious. You can't fake that. You can't fake empathy. You can't fake those things. You may not have it and you're not really good at it, but you can work hard to get there. And that's really what I found, is where I put my time and energy is in those things.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us more, like, where did you come up with the idea of putting people, processes, and technology in that order? Because I've seen it, I've seen those three things, just as I think about it right now, I've seen all different arrangements of those three words attempted in priority.
Yeah, I think for me, really, with the people part was when, so true story, I thought, on the people side, I thought, you know what, the company's changing, growing. I need to get some real big leaders in here. I'm going to go out into the city of Omaha, recruit the best. So I brought in five of the great leaders here, brought them all in. We were having meetings. And then one day, one of our scientists comes up to me and says, hey, if you don't do something, there's about 15 of us that are going to leave tomorrow. We don't like your leadership at all.
Wow, that's actually happened to you?
Yeah. So next day, and I knew something was up. Something didn't feel right. And I knew some things were kind of going on, and I was starting to get into it a little bit more. But when I heard that, and these people have been here 15, 20 years, and they had the guts to come up to me and say that, the next day I brought an attorney in and I fired them all.
Okay.
And I started over. And I said, I'm going to build this from within. And the person I kept was the entrepreneur, Dana. And we put a leadership team together. We went to the basics. We got back to rewrote our vision, mission, and core values. And we still say those and do those every single day. But it really took an act like that to effectively know. And then I had to reconcile my dad's leadership style with mine. He'd created a successful, profitable company here. And how was I going to take and build on his legacy? And so those were the things I wrestled with. But I knew I had to get the right people. And the right people were not going to come from the outside. We had built an effective program in place here. I was going to build it from within. And we started to do that. And we still had people come and go. I'm not saying it was all... There's still a lot of changes when you have new leadership and stuff. But today, the culture here is so much stronger than it's ever been. And we said 3 years ago, we were going to work on our infrastructure. Now, doesn't that sound sexy, infrastructure?
Oh, yeah.
That's our goal. First time I heard that was, well, crappy. That's pretty crappy. Who wants to work on their infrastructure? But we're in year three of building our infrastructure. And I think that's the only way we stayed open all during COVID. We're growing. We went from 110 employees. Today, we have 300 employees. That's what it really takes, is to work on that infrastructure all the time. And I know it doesn't sound sexy, but it is so key. It's so important. And then infrastructure, not only in the company, but yourself. And that was really the gist of my growth, or really where I saw the benefit and the difference.
Right. Okay. So I certainly can see how this all comes together, but I'm just still processing, like, 14 people said they were all going to quit on you.
Yeah.
And I understand. I mean, that probably, you probably did not have any other recourse other than to lawyer up and fire them all.
No, but they saw things that I knew. They wouldn't come to me and just make up stuff. There'd been a built up some trust there. But I think when you try to put scientists, people who are in science, into leadership positions, you got to spend the time and really work with them. That's what I've learned too. You can't overnight expect somebody to lead right away. But when they came to me and they saw, they're really into the details, they're really into what's happening, and they were right. In fact, one of the guys that I let go the next day, I had a guy come in and he goes, I need you to sign this paperwork. And I said, what are you talking about? You're signing your benefits and your insurance over to our company per this document. I said, no, I'm not. I said, I don't know who you are, but get out. So I kicked him out. That's how fast we had people in our that I brought in who were making changes so fast with no, and they were really working siloed that everyone wanted to prove themselves, to your point, work as hard as you can, go as far as you can. But there was no, we were going in siloed directions and no one knew what the other one was doing. And it was to go on too fast. And that was just a sign. And that all happened within 90 days from hire to fire. So that's how fast that can happen.
Wow, that is just, I mean, I've never quite seen something like that before. Yeah.
So again, all those people were good people. I don't have anything bad to say about them, but we were just, it just wasn't, there was just too much happening at the same time. And we were going too fast and too hard and trying to do too much. And we really needed to come together again and get focused, get driven on what's really important. We probably had a list of 50 projects. We had to get that down to about 4 so that we could move forward with those 4.
Right. So what are some of the questions that you can ask yourself when you need to discover what's holding you back from being the leader you want to be? And the reason I bring this up this way is because it is so challenging to look at this from the inside out. And sometimes we don't know what questions to ask. We sometimes don't even know the questions are there to ask.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. I seriously had to have someone, I had to work with someone to pull it out of me. Even writing the book, I wrote that in two. There's a long story there. When I first wrote the book, I worked with a ghostwriter, and they say, don't let anybody read your book until you're all the way done. So I didn't. I gave it to my wife. I handed it to her and she goes, this isn't you. And so I spent a whole nother year and I rewrote the book. I think we need those people. We need to work with people. I say people first. If you can find the right person to really ask the right questions, and because I don't think you can find it purely by yourself. That's what I was trying to do with books and everything. I work better when somebody can really unlock what's inside of me. I think, I thought I was working out great for a long time until I worked with a trainer who really figured out for me that my left leg had there was no feeling in my left leg, and I needed to go to get dry needle in my left leg so I could get my left leg working again. So, I mean, just we need those types of things. And the only way, the best way I know, I guess I will say, this is where I get my news, is from other people, the right people, though. You got to find that right, those right people that you can really trust. And that's a small group. That's a really small group. So I really think that best way for, to your point, I don't think you're going to find it completely yourself. You need some people that you can really genuinely work with that believe in you, that have trust in you, and you trust them. And that is probably the best piece of advice I could get. Maybe you've worked with a coach. I've worked with several coaches.
Yeah.
There's really good ones. There's really terrible ones out there. It's really when you find the right one that really fits, that unlocks those things for you, that you really start to grow.
Right. So we're getting close to the end here, of course, and there is one thing I want to mention here that lead to something else here. But going back to your mantra of people, processes, and technology, I found that processes and technology don't survive without people, and people can also easily overcome them. A big question that we see is, well, what project management software should we use to manage our team activities? And you can throw it any number of them. You got Monday, Asana, Teamwork, and 25 others that I'm not thinking of right now. And to me, there is a relatively single, a relatively simple way to identify the best one, which is what meets the needs of the business where you are right now. What do you believe will meet the needs of the business approximately 6 months to a year from now? Knowing that if you ever do outgrow the solution, you can always change to another one. You always have that freedom. And most of all, which one's going to be the most fun? Because if people don't enjoy doing it or don't enjoy using it, they won't use it. And they will put you in a position where you have to choose between their willful non-compliance with your process or them just quitting, or quiet quitting for that matter, just not participating, not working with you on it, and then things are going to fall through.
Yeah, I've got a great example of this, I think. So I'll leave you with this example. I was told to get out of the day-to-day because we're actually moving. We're moving, relocating 14 buildings to a brand new campus that we bought. And I have to work on this building project. That's pretty much my full-time job. The person I have in charge of the operations, Dana, she dug in and wanted to learn the business inside and out. And she has done that. And she has built up our directors. And she does so much during the day. Now, I could have her provide me weekly status reports of all the things that she does, which is probably, she could stay up till midnight writing down all the things that she did. But what we have decided that works best for us is that every night we do a call and she just fills me in. And it's amazing. I know more about this company than I ever did when I was in the day to day. And so we do 5, maybe it's 20 minutes, whatever. At the end of the day, she just gives me a rundown of what happened during the day. I know more about this company than I ever did when I was trying to effectively lead and know what's happening all the time around me. And I think what that showed to me was, yes, there's project management tools. Yes, you can give status updates, but you got to really find that's going to work for both of you. That's not going to consume your time. Do I want her spending another hour writing down everything she did today? That seems unproductive to me. But if she could just tell me and I keep in the loop, and we have this every single day, isn't that the best update? Doesn't that beat any project management software that's out there? Is every day you get an update of what's happening in the business?
Yeah.
So that's where I've landed, that people first, people matter. Because, man, I mean, those are the kind of people that, again, have your back. Those are the people you can trust. Those are the people that are going to just, again, are incredible. The wealth and knowledge that they bring, and they can shine a light on anything. And they'll tell you the good, the bad, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. So, As we conclude here, what I want to do, of course, is invite all of our listeners to visit Brent Pullman's website. And this is a URL that I believe you're going to find catchy and fairly easy to remember. It's www.ceoofyourheart.com. That's www.ceoofyourheart.com. And as soon as you get there, you're going to see the opportunity to claim your copy of Brett's book, Leaders Look Within. And if something about our conversation today resonated with you just a little bit, then this will give you any jumping off point you need to explore further whatever pathway you wish to. It's going to help you to dig deep to understand what's in your heart to help you unleash the true leader spirit inside of you, particularly in a corporate world where things can be demanding and success is measured in KPIs and numbers, where even if positive results happen on paper, you have more to offer your company, but now feel like just another person who goes to work each day to do a job that has to be done. I believe that a lot of folks have been there when they've worked for companies or when they work for companies. And the thing is I hear stories like this from entrepreneurs and business owners as well, where they feel like they're going into their business every day just because it's a job to do. So if you have that malaise, check out this book and go to www.ceoofyourheart.com. And with that, Brent Pullman, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor and, believe me, an education.
Thank you, Adam. But it's been great. Thanks.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.